Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux for the Rest of Us, episode 203. This is a show about all things Linux, whether it's hardware, software, whatever tickles our Linux fancy. I am Cody Cooper, a.k.a. Supercoop, and I am here once again with my good friend, the Linux maven, the door-to-door geek, Stephen McLaughlin. How's it going, Dor?
Hey, Supercoop. Things are going as well as could be expected, which makes no sense to even myself as I say it out loud. We're hitting that time of the year where everyone is taking off work. The kids are in a daze. They're still in that like candy, post come down kind of thing. Getting ready for that Christmas, sprint towards dad, can I of nonstop for about, 20 days straight.
Oh yeah. Yeah. My oldest now is in the habit of counting sleeps to whatever the next event in his life is. Right now, it's his snack day, where he is responsible for bringing snacks to preschool for the rest of the students. That's on November 30th, so that's 15 sleeps away. And he reminds me every morning that I have to change the number down one number on our dry erase board. And after that, we'll probably go to Christmas.
That's pretty awesome, I gotta say.
Yeah, but trust me, if I don't do it the first second I'm in that kitchen, I get scolded. It's like, Dad, there's too many sleeps on that board. Okay, all right, here we go.
I understand. Yesterday when I picked up my youngest from daycare, the whole way home, he told me in a British accent I was rubbish. Father, you are rubbish.
What are you letting him watch?
I don't know, but I'm telling you right now, I'm not a fan of it, no matter what. Right. And I'll say this, and I'm just going to, this is the only comment you're going to hear on this show about anything in the news cycle in America.
We are recording this.
I know. Okay. The only thing that makes me mad, the only thing that really makes me the worst, angriest, maddest, is having British people try to tell me what's wrong with this country. I personally believe they're still holding a grudge because pretty much we're the only people that beat them in war. And I'm pretty sure if a war again started tomorrow between us, we would beat them yet again. So for them to try to tell me what's wrong with my country is maybe the worst insult of all time.
I heard that they were just upset because we have larger drink sizes at all the fast food chains. For instance, our small is their large.
Well, that's the thing. Nobody's healthier than anybody else. They like literally have mayonnaise on everything. I mean, whatever. Nobody's healthy. And they're not special. And this is what, and even John Cleese said he was upset. John Cleese said he was morbidly upset at he's worked for decades and decades and decades to maintain a proper image of what British people are. Yet for some reason on American television, when you hear a British accent, you people think we're smart. We're not. We're the drunks of the world that nobody likes. We have bad teeth. So he is besmirched.
As he should be.
As he should be. Now, that's a British guy I listen to.
Yeah, yeah. I've been known to binge watch some Britcoms in my day, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just good stuff.
Speaking of Britcoms, and yes, you started this conversation. There was the old one. It might have been mid-70s. I watched it in syndication on PBS when I was a child. But did you ever see the show Are You Being Served?
I know the name.
It was like a micro department store. Imagine like a small JCPenney, but it was just dealing with that retail crew and like their customers. But for years, I always just thought that was like the cool, because it always came on late at night, like after my parents were gone. I mean, it's gone to sleep. And I need. I'm gonna have to go get all the episodes.
Well, have you seen the modern version of that in America?
No.
I can't remember what it's called, but it's basically like they're making fun of Walmart, and it's Walmart employees instead of Walmart. It's called Cloud9.
I've seen an ad for that show. I was disappointed that there was a show a few years ago called 10 Times or Less. It had to deal with the grocery industry, and I came from grocery, many years, and even that, I just have no tolerance for tame BS anymore. That's not to say anything I watch has to be extreme. It just has to be good. Right. So I have a very low tolerance for tame BS.
Right. The only reason I watched any of it was because I knew whatever was happening in the Walmart store was like this happening on TV, but only worse.
Oh, yeah.
Because if there's one thing I've learned, TV and movies cannot even approach real life.
Uh-uh.
You know, it's always crazier.
Oh, normally I don't do this because I never track who's watching during the show, but Richard Hughes is watching live late on a Tuesday, so thank you, Richard. But yeah, Richard also mentions Red Dwarf, and yeah, you can't just, when you're talking about Britcoms, you can't forget Red Dwarf, you can't forget Black Books, Father Ted, the IT Crowd, of course, and many others. Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, which was have you seen Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
No, I like Blackadder.
Oh. Just do yourself a favor. Whenever you have a spare moment, go look up Garth Marenghi's Dark Place on YouTube. just watch some clips. It's fantastic.
Okay. Take your word on it.
So what was this? And then we haven't done a show in a while. Was this show about British comedy or politics? What was this show about again? Even though I just did the intro.
This show is about anything we want it to be about. And typically, we at least rant on either Apple or Microsoft or British people. And so, apparently, this show is British people.
I'm glad that you reminded me. So, my dad yesterday took the boys down to visit him because we hadn't seen him in a couple months. And he's been talking about getting a new computer for a long time, which he just keeps putting off because he's running off of an old, what is it again? Oh, it's an old Mac Mini, an original Mac Mini, this single core Mac Mini running like OS 10.2 or 3, just it's nearly a decade old. Anyhow, he's just talking about getting a new computer. He goes, "Well, I still need to save up some more money." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he's just like, "Well, I want to get that new iMac, but I only have $1,400." And I said, "Okay, stop." Did a full assessment of his needs, gave him some options. Kind of did a low end, mid to low, and then mid-range cost assessment of what I think you might need. It started from a Chromebox to like a low-end Lenovo mini PC or Dell equivalent, and then like a Lenovo tower. And because he doesn't need to do much, so he's gonna get a huge monitor, update his desk, get a bunch of stuff, and then try the Chromebox. Because if he doesn't like that, he can give it to my sister, and then he'll just get something else. But all of that for less than $1,000. But keep in mind, he's spending about $400 or $500 on this ultra huge monitor he absolutely has to have. But I'm like, okay.
Right. And I'm putting a link, if this, then that. I'm putting a link in the notes right now. As soon as I sign in to If This Then That, have LastPass do the right thing by me. And do that. It's to Chromebookchart.com, all one word. I am falling in love with sites that do this kind of categorization. Basically, it's like Mark Cockrell from Everyday Linux and his spreadsheets, but it's basically somebody else doing it for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to make sure this is in the notes. Okay, it is. Chromebook comparison chart. .com is a very easy place where you can easily compare all the Chrome quote-unquote devices, and that's the real reason I like this, is it even goes into Chrome Bits, which is the Chromebook on a stick, and the Chrome Bases, and the Chrome Boxes, and the Chrome Bookses. It gives into everything. So from this page, you can basically just click on Chrome Boxes, and you can see right now, bam, there's four Chrome Boxes. The Acer Chromebook CXI, the Asus Chromebox, the Google Chromebox for meetings, mm-hmm. and the HP Chromebox. Now, the Google Chromebox for meeting, that's the one that's literally like $6,000.
Yeah, it's insane.
So let's not look at that one.
Yeah, no.
The HP Chromebox goes from 2 gigs to 8 gigs of RAM, Celeron up to a Core i7. Really, to me, i7 is too much. I'm looking at the Asus Chromebox, which is a Celeron, an i3 or an i7, and I think i3 on a Chromebox on more a Chrome OS is a really, I don't want to say adequate, a really good level, a really good interface to gone. And if you click it, it basically defaults to the i3 version on Amazon with their tag on it. The whole reason this site exists is it only links to stuff on Amazon, and it only uses their Amazon affiliate page. So just know that. Mm-hmm. If you go there, you click the link, you buy something, they're getting a percentage of it. I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying make sure you're aware of it. But if you click the link, it goes to a Intel i3 4 gigabytes of RAM, which I gotta say would probably run really, really good as a desktop.
Yeah. I mean, it all just came down to, I just asked him. I was like, so what do you need to do? And then what do you want to do on the machine? I was fully set to, either build him a mid-range tower, or just buy one from a reputable manufacturer, pull the drive out, wipe it, and put like elementary on it, because he's all about the aesthetics about it. But for the money, I mean, he was happy because with the assessment I did for him, he can afford everything he needs right now, and he can go buy a new phone and probably still have some money left over. So,
gotcha. Well, yeah, and I'm just going to say there also is the Chrome base. The Chrome base is almost like the old school all-in-one Mac type devices. Mm-hmm. That is the flat screen, a 22-inch flat screen, Intel Celeron, 2 gigs mm-hmm. of RAM, $295. For the price, it really isn't bad, but I would honestly like a little bit more specs than that.
Yeah, that's definitely a good option, but he liked the size of the screen on the iMac, because he got to go play with one at a local Simply Mac, which is a Macintosh authorized reseller, and the salesperson was just drilling 4K into his head. And I was like, Dad, do you know what 4K means? And he's like, no, I have no idea. I just know it looked pretty. I said, okay. So I was looking at the monitors for him. He's getting this really nice BenQ. I think it's a 29 or a 30 inch. I think it was like, it's going to be insane. So I said, what's great about going this route too is that if you do want a more powerful machine later, you have all the satellite devices, the monitor, new keyboard, mouse, desk, everything included. You can just upgrade at will. It's not a problem, but yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. The only thing I will say is devil's advocate kind of thing. I know if you listen to this show for any length of time, I've 180'd on this mentality of it is if you're buying a Chrome box or a Chrome base, don't ask me, this is all the listeners, don't ask me if you can put Linux on it, which means, of course, now I'm going to get emails asking me. Because mm-hmm. if you want to put Linux on a computer, buy a computer that can natively take Linux on it. Is going to be my suggestion all the time, because you're always going to get a better experience.
Right.
There might be ways you can hack around on these things, but why? Just buy, a cheap mini PC like an Intel NUC or a Zotac ZBox and just install Linux on it, because like you open up an Intel NUC, at least on the first generation's one, and it had a pamphlet telling you step by step how to install Linux Mint on them. Stick with what is supposed to be on the OS's, because the main reason I don't like the idea of installing Linux on stuff like Chromebooks is the manufacturer now has no desire to really help or support you anymore, because you just basically went out of your way to do something that's unwarranted or unsupported. Just go get a laptop that you can put Linux on.
Mm-hmm. I have nine Chrome devices. I want to ask you. I'm gonna do it one by one if I can install Linux on them. Are you ready for this? Oh no, I'll just send you an email. No, I'll send you nine emails later.
Yeah, send me nine different emails exactly.
And what's the address I should send those to again? Wink, wink.
Steve@smdcomputers.net.
oh man, that's so inside.
It is. That's okay. I will say seriously, people, Chromebookchart.com. Bookmark that thing. Anytime you hear anybody talking about Chromebooks, it's very easy to come here and just say, oh, show me only devices with 4 gigs of RAM. Show me things that are only, 13-inch screen, and you can very easily see which ones have the support that you want, whether it's touchscreen, mm-hmm. fanless, mm-hmm. convertible, yada, yada, yada. This to me is a great resource.
No, it is a fan. I can speak to that from firsthand experience, because last night sent you a Voxer message asking you, basically telling you what I was thinking about, and you immediately sent me that link and a couple others. And yeah, I was able to immediately just click on Chromebox and see the 6 or 8 options that you just mentioned on the show. And before anybody jumps to the conclusions, even though this is a Linux show, I'm not outright bashing OS X. But here's the thing. I know my father pretty well. I know his financial status. I know what more than likely he's going to be doing on the computer, what he's interfacing with. So I was more so trying to walk him through and help him help him along to bring him to the realization of what his needs are. And he couldn't give me a good reason for buying a new iPhone or a Mac other than, well, it's what your sister runs and I can call her for questions. I said, well, yeah, you could, but you can't call me for questions anymore. I just kind of threw that out there. She's like, well, why? And I said, well, I've always been your tech guy, but I don't run OS X anymore. I don't have an iPhone. And I said, so do you want her walking you through step-by-step of stuff to do, or do you want me walking you through step-by-step stuff to do? And he was immediately just, okay, so what are your options again?
yeah, you'll have that.
Yeah, something tells me the dental hygienist isn't going to be good enough when it comes to support. Oh, boy.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Nope, not at all, not at all. So I think we actually do have a list of topics we planned on talking about here. Let's go to the first one here. Goodbye Trello. Trello's still around, but is this just a list of alternatives?
Basically, there was nothing wrong with Trello. Sorry, I got a little bit confused. To me, there's nothing wrong with Trello. I don't believe Trello is literally going anywhere. This is just basically other alternative solutions. Trello, basically, I think they unveiled like a Trello Platinum version, which costs money. So immediately everyone just, you know, gets their panties in a bunch and start talking about other things that basically do the same kind of functionality.
Mm.
I thought that's what happened. And like the very first one, Cabana Flow, which I'm sorry, just makes me, all I can picture in my head when I hear Cabana Flow is like kids in the hall and a very ugly Canadian pale guy in bikini around a pool. It's just not good images in my head. But Cabana Flow Web is a very functional Trello-like board system. I can't remember what these systems are called, but I always think of them as like boards.
It's like workflow software.
Sure. I'll go for that.
A guy in a plaid shirt told me that.
Well, then he must know what he's talking about. Did he have a beard?
No, but he was twirling his mustache from both sides.
Ah, fuck. Well, then there you go. That's it. So
right before he threw a Molotov cocktail up against the side of a Walgreens.
Gotcha. So if you're in the need for that kind of workflow organization, then this, to be honest, what was a really good link. It was over on makeuseof.com, which I will say, if you can stomach the ads, it is a pretty good list of tools, including Microsoft Planner.
Did that hurt to say? I digress.
It did more than hurt. I think I got to clean something up now. But it definitely, to me, looked like a good set of tools to play with, even if they list Microsoft as one of their tools.
I'm not, okay, fine. Yeah, I lost a little bit of respect for a buddy of mine recently. He wanted to share a file with me. He was over at my house. We were having a barbecue, and he sent me a link, and it was a link to a Microsoft OneDrive. I said, what the hell are you trying to pull here? And he goes, I don't want to use Dropbox anymore. I was like, okay, dude, whatever.
Isn't that kind of like jumping out of the frying pan and jumping into the nuclear reactor?
into the deep fryer.
Yeah, I mean, into the AIDS-infested batch of needles? I don't know. I mean, it just doesn't seem like that's... Okay.
Not against anything, you know, not against a batch of needles.
Oh, I'm against AIDS, but yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, opensource.com, which we've mentioned more than a couple times on this show, which is a Red Hat sponsored, supported site, which means sometimes you come across some bias articles on there, which is okay, because they clearly say on every page, Red Hat sponsored for the whole site. But there is also a good plethora of good articles on this site as well. And this one I thought was honestly very interesting. Since it seems to me that it seems to be that a huge majority of project managers I've ran across in all my different avenues of life seem to be maybe the people with the lowest IQ score of any profession in enterprise, next to maybe sanitary engineers. They need software and tools to help them, I think, more than the average fella, the average folk, because to organize some of these big projects is not easy for anybody, especially when you get to them kind of folks. And I do think project software is only going to become more vital to big successes, is what I'm going to say. You're going to be able to do successes without it, no problem. But in order to pull in a bunch of different resources, a bunch of different tools, a bunch of different services, a bunch of different people into one project and have it actually be handled without going clinically insane, it's going to take tools. And some of these looked honestly pretty good. I'm not going to say they're, you know, they're going to compete with the IBM tools that are out there or anybody else's, but they're definitely pretty good tools from what I've looked at. The first one is called My Collab. Second one was Udo. And if you look, some of these are a little bit reminiscent of that task type board we were talking about. Some of them go into more of the actual task management system. These are really interesting things. And if you are a technician who thinks you're getting burnt out in the keeping up on the latest fads, I will tell you, a very successful pivot out of your job as a technician might be in project management. But it's one of those things, the split second you make that transition is when the timer now is ticking, because you're going to soon be just as dumb as all the other project managers. But for that instant, you're going to be the project manager that knows technology. So these are the kind of tools where if you already have them under your belt, they can make you, in a very express fashion, become vital, is what I'll say.
Well, and it's just a good practice. I mean, regardless of the tool, whether digital or physical or the industry, don't get too comfortable in your own box with your own set of tools, with your own skill set. At least know what's out there. Don't scoff at it just because it's new. I can tell you in my line of work, and with my current employer, I've been there 9 years, and it seems like they keep changing programs, and I mean programs within the company, and then also software. And I've been very just for no good reason resistant to some new things, and then later after I realized I could have benefited from their effectiveness, I see someone using it in a different way. I was like, oh. When did that happen? Like, it happened like months ago. There was an email about it. I'm like, whatever. I could still use the virtualized instance of the old one. But I guess that's just me being a grumpy old man.
Well, I'm not going to comment on that. I will say the three tools I really encourage people to look at, and I mean look at hard, are the last three on this list: Open Project Libre Plan and Project Libre. These are the three to me that look most like what I've seen out of Microsoft Project Interface, because honestly, let's not try to fool each other. That's the standard you have to compete by. What I literally encourage everyone to do, because I did this one time, was we started a huge project at work without telling anybody. Okay, I was involved in basically every meeting from the beginning, and all the task assignment and all the progress reports and everything. I was in the loop for everything. I downloaded one of these apps and I put it on my computer, and I acted, quote unquote, like I was the project manager and loaded all the things in these tools. And there was a couple of times where I was able to basically show the project manager, who was actually a nice guy, really nice guy, I said, look, this is what I see. Can I see yours? And I learned a lot in comparing the two. I was able to, and like I was able to show him a thing or two that he skipped in his schedules, because really that's what it seems like a fair amount of the project manager task is not managing the project, but it's setting a date, telling everyone else the date, and then trying to meet that date.
Right.
So it's about, you know, getting all your different tasks and all your expectation of how long each task is going to take, and then projecting out where you think that ending date's going to be. Interesting stuff, even though I really do make fun of project managers because my brother-in-law is one, and, you know, somebody has to make fun of him because, you know, he should be made fun of. He's a project manager.
I hear you there. Those people do exist.
Yes.
All right, very good. Now, the next thing on the list, I'm excited about this because this is something that I've been doing quite a bit of research on lately.
I'm hoping you're talking about the man and not the article.
His product and also the industry around that and other like products, but I've also read this article directly and it was very, very well written.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing, honestly, every year or so, I like to bring up Moxie Marlin Spike because I think it's one of those people right now, as time stands, not enough people are aware of this guy. Not enough people know what this guy's doing. Not enough people know what this guy did. Not enough people know what this guy stands for. Not enough people know how many people hate this guy. I do think, honestly, in 10, 15 years, there's going to be some class where we're going to be teaching some history about technology, and the name Moxie Marlin Spike is going to be a pretty important name. That's just one of my beliefs. Okay, this guy is basically the sandal-wearing, dreadlock in his hair, digital freedom fighter for individual privacy, and he is at the forefront of creating an encryption protocols, not encryption itself, but everything around encryption to make sure that it's actually done right and in a secure fashion. This was a Wired article from like 4 or 5 months ago, but yeah, this is one of the articles that I, you know, read in air quotes and listened to, and I gotta say, he is a really fascinating guy. I'd love to see a documentary of everything that he basically, you know, of his life.
Have you read the whole article?
I listened to it.
Okay. Yeah, I was about to say, no, you're not one for reading, but yeah, I do like the, especially the ending with the callback to the sort of the human element, how they start the story. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, for instance, I despise Facebook. I do not use Facebook. I will not use Facebook ever, period. I don't care if I tomorrow get fired from my job, and then every place I go to interview, they tell me, oh, well, send us your Facebook thing because we have to have that. Oh, sorry, I don't have one. Oh, well, then we can hire you. Okay, well, I'll keep looking for a job. I just will not be on Facebook. Moxie Marlin Spike created Redfone and Signal, and that back end for Signal, which was encryption, text messaging, basically text messaging back and forth, that was adopted by WhatsApp. WhatsApp is owned by Facebook. WhatsApp is obsessively, ridiculously popular. I mean, it's like saying soccer or football in the rest of the world. That's how popular WhatsApp is. And its security is Moxie Marlin Spike. He basically created it. So there's a little doubt in my mind it's done right, but I'm still not going to use it. But if you use Facebook and you use WhatsApp and you turn on the security features and you know, have your private chats going back and forth, you can be rest assured the only data that Facebook is getting and sharing is the metadata about that conversation, not the actual conversation itself.
Yeah, I I do have a Facebook account. I never use it up until a few days ago where everybody was on Facebook, but then I got to, I don't know. I just hadn't really used it in a number of years, maybe like 5 or 6 years. And I kind of got wrapped up into, you know, seeing what was on this person's stuff and then checking my messages and did anybody like my post. And I just deleted all the links I had in my browsers again. I was just like, well, that'll tide me over for another decade.
Right. And I can't remember if they even got into this. Yeah. He basically doesn't quote unquote live in the U.S. Moxie. Mm-hmm. He lives in a boat 40 miles offshore for a reason, because, you know, he, let's just say doesn't trust everybody, which is one of those things. If you're doomed, it's like the Cyclops one eye doomed to see his own death kind of thing. When you know that much about technology, my logic is it's probably really hard to trust people because you know all the weaknesses in all the different software that's being used. So yeah, he's a little private.
Understandable.
But yeah, now on the same angle, on the same trajectory, on the same metaphysical path, I'll say, Moxie, Marlin, Spike, if you go to vids.localmsp.org, I have no idea what the hell any of this site is for, but I don't care because it has good stuff. When you go there, there's two folders. If you look at one, is called hacking related documentaries. Yeah, no one's gonna get it. And cons. If you click on like the hacking related documentaries, you basically get a list of hacking documentaries back from 1990 up to 2013 and others. And these are all longer documentaries, I'm going to say, if I remember correctly. If you go into the other folder, cons, you get a whole list of all kinds of conferences. And basically you click in there and then you can see all the different years of all the different conferences and all the different talks that were recorded video. So this is the kind of thing, if you literally want to not have your history on YouTube of seeing a lot of stuff and you want to take certain amounts of video completely off the, you know, off of your network and keep it, you know, on the side, really good stuff. Everything from open security training videos, which is, they have at least like 80 videos, I'm going to say, for that, to just like Rubicon, Sky Dog Con, on and on and on and on. Near endless hours of fun to be had is what I'm going to say.
And I should, as I'm a responsible user of this cyberspace thing, mention that, yes, you were just provided with a link to a treasure trove of videos, but if you're a Comcast customer, please remember that as of November 1st, we all now have a full terabyte data cap limit before horrendous charges ensue. So if you don't know how much data you've been using per month, if you're a Comcast customer, you can just Google Comcast data usage meter, or just Comcast data usage. There's a variety of links to take you directly to a portion of their site, log in, and you can look at your past 6 months, month by month, to see how much data you have been using in a month, to see if it would be worthwhile for you to pay the extra $50 to $75 a month to become, once again, an unlimited user. I can say that as a gamer, I'm getting a PS4 Pro here in the next few days. It's a gift. But I'm not going to immediately download all the games I own for that again, even though it was a terabyte drive, because then it's going to significantly reduce the amount of data I can use in a month without facing overage charges. So, of course, Street Fighter V, I'll download right away. No problem, but...
Well, yeah.
Of course, because I got to put that arcade stick to use again. Mm-hmm. Too long. But yeah, just thought I'd throw that out there. And here's the thing, unless you follow, you know, certain tech blogs or just Reddit online, they didn't send out an email to you letting you know, so I'm telling as many people as I can, and you know, the billions of people listen to this show, especially all the ones that are live right now listening, you're welcome for the great content. Please be aware that is the thing, and pass it along, because I would hate to see somebody who didn't know maybe downloading all this video and then seeing that horrendous bill just after the 1st of December.
Yeah, that I'm really happy I'm not a Comcast customer right now. I really don't want to know how much bandwidth I use right now. I really don't want to know, because I also know it's only going to get worse
of course.
My kids are 8 and 11. I don't see their internet usage going down in the next 5 years. No way, no. I just see it skyrocketing, you know, but, yeah, just a little bit scary.
Yep. With the amount of devices, I mean, especially with families, the amount of devices you're going to be, that are going to be on the network at any given time, the increase in quality of content, specifically, you know, streaming 4K, larger file sizes for downloads, everything. I mean, you're right. It's only going to get more expensive. I mean, we're only going to be consuming more data. And trust me, if I had another option in this area that provided cable, or in the area I live in, we have no access to Fios anywhere. So it's easily 2 hours away before it's close to anybody else. But I can downgrade to a local DSL provider and never podcast again or enjoy the internet experience, or I can just stick with Comcast for now. So begrudgingly, that's what I have to do.
Yeah. Hey, we all have to do our thing. Yeah. Okay. Well, next is basically just a continuation. I've been saying it for years that Linux is where the money's at and Linux is where the job are at. It's only become more and more and more and more and more. And this is like more layers of butter on top of the pancakes. Okay. Microsoft released a Linux version. They have a Linux version of their own. They have a version of BSD that's all their own. And now Amazon joins in and basically has its very own version of Linux that technically you can download. It is really nothing more than like a Linux manager. This OS is really not meant to be downloaded and used like a desktop operating system or like a random server operating system. This is a very hyper focused OS specifically for basically the Amazon ecosystem.
I love this description. It says Amazon Web Services is letting customers download its own artisanal Linux.
Yeah, made in small batches,
locally sourced.
Yeah, organically grown.
That's right. No GMOs anywhere to be seen.
No GMOs. Yeah, and peanut allergy free. I'll just say this is to me is the kind of interesting thing. Linux is shooting in those niches, and it's basically completely owning the niches. Nothing can compete, at least for now, with this kind of thing. Happening, and this is the kind of thing where if you really are a Linux from scratch kind of person, a Arch type person, a Gen 2 type person, your knowledge of how Linux interacts from packages, kernel, and you know all of the higher end things make you much more desirable for a company like Amazon, who's trying to make their own Linux, I was going to say. This is a whole bunch of different tiers of Linux knowledge and Linux jobs you can get. And this is an example of the really severe high-end Linux knowledge. I just got to say, it's just inevitable to where I don't really know where Microsoft is going to be ran as a server operating system, except for you go buy this software off the shelf, and one of the requirements is, well, you have to install Microsoft Office. Yeah, then the enterprise spin up the Microsoft VM. We have to run it for this software that we just bought, where everything else is basically going to be Linux ran. Mm-hmm. I firmly believe it's just a matter of time.
Yep. No, I can totally see that.
I don't know now, Cody, if I've ever seen a .eu domain before.
Oh, yeah, I have.
I don't know if I ever have. Now, stop thinking about it. Trigger-happy.eu, which, of course, because we're talking about the EU, has nothing to do with guns, firearms, ammunition, clips, magazines, rifles, Lugers, 22s, Saturday Night Specials, none of that.
What about 357 Magnums?
Or 357 Magnums. Or Desert Eagles.
What about a Styrog?
Or Do You Feel Lucky, Punk?
No.
Okay. Trigger-happy.eu is more about triggers as events. Now, if this, then that, just did a global change in themselves, is what I'm going to say. There's still no paid option that I know of to pay if this then that. And they basically just took all their recipes and threw them away, and now they have applets. Where at least initially they took away a little bit of functionality that people think is going to come back. It's just a question of how long. So right now there's two options out there that I know of: Node-RED, which I didn't know, but is built into the default Raspbian operating system. I heard it someplace, and the very same day, Lord Drak and Lord D told me about it as well. So that is right there built in, ready for you to play with. This is another one, but this one abruptly says an open source clone of ifthisthenthat.com. Okay. Triggerhappy.eu is downloadable, which is the key, I think, as far as I'm concerned. It's a key where you can basically connect to right now these services: Evernote, GitHub, Insta, Push, Pelican, Pocket, Pushbullet, Todoist, Trello, because that Twitter, Wallabag? That's a great name, Wallabag. So you can basically daisy chain like these services together, have events cause triggers, and have triggers cause other things to happen. There's the blog, the documentation, and the source code down at the bottom. I don't know how easy this is to install. But I will say I'm definitely interested with it. You need Django, which I think Thank thought was a content management system like WordPress, but I could be mistaken. And you need yourself some Python, surprise Python, in order to basically get all the important stuff for this be up and running. This to me is just one of those things I really hope becomes more popular as time goes on, gets more polished as time goes on, and just becomes better as time goes on, because this is the kind of service where I would love to be able to pull back inside my own domain and own it without having to basically have a PhD.
Yeah, you know what? I'm sort of glad we brought this up now, because for years you've been speaking, you know, to If This Then That's praises, and I never got around to it. But knowing that it's fundamentally changing at least the way we're interfacing with it and creating these recipes or now applets, I feel like I should really invest some time getting on the ground floor, because you've always spoken, and I mean it's just a fact, if you automate certain things, you're taking time that you would be spending to manually doing those tasks and allocating them elsewhere. So I think that I should it's going to be a 2017 resolution for me, and you're going to be responsible for all my success, so I signed you up for that. You're welcome.
Okay. To me, it's almost a question of time. A little bit of a question of time, a little bit of a question of passion. I'm becoming a YouTube junkie thanks to YouTube-RED, where I'm like finding things like history crash course. I don't even like history. I literally don't like history. But I watched like crash course history, and then all of a sudden, 6 hours later, I now understand how unique the Mongols are compared to a lot of other civilizations in history.
Right.
You know what I mean? But because of YouTube-RED, no ads. So there's certain things now, like, awesome games done quick. Mm-hmm. I just found out what it means, Cody, to save the animals or kill the animals, where that came from.
Where?
First off, have you ever heard of that on these game live
AGDQs?
Events?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome games done quick, and there's a couple of them.
Well, no, I know the events, and I've seen playthroughs of the events, but I'm not familiar with that phrase, the kill the animals, save the animals.
Right. Okay. They do charity events, literally hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they always have a thing where they seem like they get people to start to donate towards either killing the animals or saving the animals. And I never knew what they were talking about, but I saw it literally, seemingly for years, where they would say that. Well, it turns out in Super Metroid, I believe it was Super Metroid, it might have been Metroid 2, at the very end, after you defeat Mother Brain, Okay. On your way out, when the countdown's going down, you can make a little diversion and you can go into the first, one of the first rooms where you pick up the bomb. And there's three animals in there. There were two species of animals in there. One of them taught you how to do the wall jump. The other one taught you how to do the speed run spark.
Yeah.
And if you go into that room, shoot the wall, when you're watching the planet explode, you see a little dot come off to the side where the animals escaped. So you save the animals.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can purposely not go in there and save them and you kill the animals. But that's where that came from. I had no idea. That was,
oh, wow. Kind
of, I know, one of those truly useless things that will never get me any money or credit or anything in life, but now that I know, thanks to YouTube.
It's very true. Yeah, YouTube recently got me caught up on the entirety of The Sopranos, just between the 90-second and 4-minute clips, so I don't need to go watch the series anymore. Realistically, I know everything that's happened. I don't know the order, I don't remember all the names, but damn it, I got my fill. Everything, even though Phil's no pun intended, Phil's a character that gets whacked. He gets shot outside of his Ford Explorer at a gas station. The bastard. Anyway,
doesn't like everybody get shot basically. I mean, like sooner or later.
Yeah, there was one guy shot, beaten to death with a baseball bat. There's one guy that he met his death in a very unique way of a pool cue. We'll just leave it at that.
Sounds.
Yeah.
Okay. One last link I want to throw out there, but first, I'm really incompetent and ignorant again. I know I mentioned this last episode, but now it's official. If you go to podnuts.com, we have a new quote unquote member of the family. And I really do encourage people, welcome him with open arms. If you go to, podnos.com/MRT, podcast, Matt is now a member of the network. It's MRP Tech Podcast. Really nice guy, really sharp guy, talks about everything. He literally will spend like an entire episode talking about Windows 10 and upgrades. He'll then spend an entire episode about Apple and a announcement they had, going over all the different details about it. And then he'll do a complete episode on Ubuntu Studio. So I think this guy has just as much, if not more, ADD than I have. So congratulations, Matt. You not only distro hop, you basically go for everything. And he is a teacher and educator, and really has a passion. Basically what I'll say is a passion to learn and share, which, to be honest, I think was really the very first silent initiative of Podnuts, was just to learn and share. He's doing it his way. And, to be honest, I listened to him. I listened to all of his episodes. I was basically immediately smitten. And just asked him if he could come on the network, and he said yes. So he's now officially being published. I'm going to backfill. I'm going to post all 34 of his shows on Podnuts as soon as I get a chance right now. His latest, two newest episodes are up there, so you can download, subscribe, and listen.
Yeah, welcome to the network, and looking forward to checking it out as a new show. I'm sick of all the other shows on the network. I could give or take them. No, I'm just kidding. Speaking about that, we must have mentioned this last time, but just in case I didn't, and I have a better perspective now. Podnuts Pro is relaunched. Fantastic. We have Matt Rainey, Marvin B, and what other some other guy with a beard.
Yeah, some guy who I'm told I can't directly look at because he's too attractive is what he keeps saying.
Right. And I'm not even going to say his name because he said that he doesn't know me on a recent episode. So, I get it.
Wow. Well, I'll curb and change the subject and say, well, if you liked the Techie Geek at all, if you liked, I'm trying to remember, I want to say, I can't remember the name of his other podcast. Tracy Holt had another podcast. It was called like Open. I can't remember now. But Tracy Holt now has two shows on the network as well. And I don't know if I said it here or not. So I'm sorry if I haven't. Sports Nuts and Book Nuts. Sports Nuts is basically just a generalization on all sports of all types. He'll basically pick games of the week and, you know, things to talk about with specific sports. And then Book Nuts, it's him and Jonathan, they do going over all kinds of books. The range of books I'll say that they listen to is literally from one end to the other, which of course means nothing. It's a very broad range of books and really good conversations about those books. So if you like audiobooks at all, you really should check out Book Nuts and send Tracy an email just saying bother, bother, bother in the subject line, and you'll make me very happy.
On it, for sure.
Yeah, but I also think there's going to be a couple other new shows too soon. And the mini PC show, I gotta say, mini computers. I've tried not to talk about Raspberry Pi stuff here too much because now we have an entire show where I don't shut up about them. Okay, now, I said it once, I'll say it again. If you truly thrive on knowing Linux and gaming stuff, you only have one option, and that's Linux Gamecast. Okay, if you're offended by people who speak frankly, subscribe to their shows, give them the download counts, visit their Amazon page once in a while too as well, but at least subscribe for their notes, because they are, as far as I can tell, the premier source for all Linux gaming stuff. And maybe the most important thing is how timely they are. When games come out, they don't wait 2-3 weeks and then tell you about them. They tell you about them immediately.
Mm-hmm. I always explain the show to people I have that I recommend it to is, look, these guys, you want the Iggy from these guys on compatibility. They're just brutally honest. If they really, really like something, they tell you. If something needs work, they tell you. If something is beyond help, they tell you. And yes, they're very consistent. They are very timely. That's a great way of putting it. And yeah, they're over 200 episodes deep now. Just a great, great core group of guys in Pedro, Van, and Jordan. But then they also have a satellite of co-hosts that kind of come in and out mm-hmm. based on availability. You know, there's MT, there's Strider, you know, Sandy, who hasn't been on the show in forever. But yeah, great, great group of guys. But yeah, definitely Linux Gamecast. Check them out. I listen to them every week. They record live on Saturdays, so if you have a 5 or 6 hour block of time to just stare into the ether, definitely check them out too. You can subscribe to their YouTube channel, and we're not getting any sort of, you know, kickback from this. Just like Dora was saying, good content. They don't just do game reviews. They also talk about the industry, you know, compatibility, hardware, software, and they have their own weekly Linux show now, which is a Linux Weekly Daily Wednesday.
Yeah, all I know is they have a German who's a racist. They have the most nasty, mean, vulgar, vile Canadian you've ever met in your life. And then they have some third world country guy who gets drunk a lot.
Well, he's from Space Portugal.
Oh, third world country.
Yep.
The reason I mention them is because I want to make sure people understand that's where I go to for the real information. But I also like other sources of game stuff just because can you really have too much? And this one was actually brought to me on the Mattermost server by, I think, the guy in the chat, JT Lively, I believe was the guy who sent me this link. It is itch.io. itch.io/game/platform-linux 6,843 results. Cody, I don't know if you ever expected to have that kind of numbers when you look for Linux gaming before, because I don't think I ever did.
Did you say something? I'm installing a couple of these games I just saw on this website.
Yeah, and they separately, they tag stuff that costs money versus stuff that's free. There's plenty of stuff here that's free. I'll say that. Plenty of stuff here that's free. Then I have more than a couple of stuff that costs money. And one of the ones that I found honestly fascinating was the FPV series of games, which is the first person view quadcopter racing games.
Ooh.
Which just literally, I had to literally like stop and think for a second. Wait a minute. This is a game? This is a game. Because in real life, quadcopter races, first-person view races, I think are among the one of the things that are going to become really popular as time goes on kind of thing. Now, I will say you will see all kinds of games from the some kid who drank too much Mountain Dew in his basement, put stuff together and called it a game. And you will see the high-end stuff here as well. You'll see basically all kinds of stuff, including DMCA's Sky, which can now, Cody, have you kept up at all about No Man's Sky? Because from what I believe I've heard, it basically came out to where everyone was expecting this explosion of whatever, everything, and when it launched, it was just like,
I'm quite well versed in it. Let's just put it that way. Yes. And the best way that I can explain it is, let's say that a child wanted to make a video game, and it was a 5-year-old kid, came up with a cool, ambitious idea, and he's backed by a corporation with limited funds, and every week the kid says, oh, and I'm going to have this in my game too, guys. But instead of not taking him seriously, everybody just started making a list of all the stuff that was going to be in the game. And, yeah, the thing here's... I have a better way to articulate this later, but I'm going to pose a question to you guys and to everybody listening, and I just want you to sit on it for a while and trust me that I have a better way to articulate this and a better way to help you walk through it, okay? I want you to think of your favorite video game ever, and I want you to think of how many hours that you've played it. Just come up with a number, whether it's 100, 500, 1,000, cap it out of whatever. Now think of how much you spent on that game, whether it was full retail price, a physical disc, whether it was a digital title, whether it's a mobile game that you've pumped money into through, you know, in-app purchases, merchandise for whatever. And I want you to come up with a number of how many dollars or cents per hour that you expect to get out of a game. And because whenever you're arguing about the worth of a game, you damn well better know that number.
Right. Well, I mean, my knee-jerk reaction I have to keep thinking is, in actuality, the number is actually low.
It is.
Because people expect so many hours out of a game. You know what I mean?
Well, sure. Like I said, this is a rabbit hole that, I mean, we could record for another 2 or 3 hours and go down it, but let's just say I have something in the works, and I'm going to pose this argument in a more articulated way that's going to cause for some better discussion here. But that's where I'll leave it for now.
Yeah, because I'm a firm believer. You get what you pay for. I don't mind paying for games. I love the idea of having free taste of games, so I have an idea of what I'm getting into, that hook, if you will. But I'm a firm believer. I'd never mind paying for stuff. What I will not like is nagging little incessant, oh, but just $2 more. 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 I'm a guy who I like to at least have an idea of what I'm going to pay when I'm done playing this game, not have surprises along the way, which I think, if I might be completely wrong, I think is, I don't want to say part of the problem these days, but it's a mystery, it seems like, sometimes.
It's not a part. I'll dip my toe in here a little bit since you're dangling that one piece of meat out there.
I can't help it, sorry.
But here's the thing you need to consider. With the access that people have now to being exposed to these properties, or let's just say in this case, this game, right? You have to take into account that as the audience grows, the pool of content needs to grow too. And they have to monetize it somehow. Whereas, I mean, especially in mobile games, you know, no one's going to pay $60 for a mobile game. Well, I shouldn't say that because there's a fantastic, Tommy Refness. He's one of the, he's the lead programmer, one of my favorite games, Super Meat Boy. You should, I'll try to find a link to it and include it in the show notes, but he actually released an app on the iTunes App Store, and every time he got a purchase on it, he increased the price. Just to prove a point. And it was just some garbage app, but it got up to over $700. People were still buying it.
Ooh. Right. I believe it.
But the thing you need to take into account is that with this content, yes, costs are going to rise as the audience grows, and it's either they release a version of the game every so often, whether that's every month, every year, every 3 to 5 years, or they come up with an engine that works, that a playground, if you will, that they can work within, and then they continue to develop content for within that limited area of resources until the next thing comes along, and then they migrate those users to the next thing. So ask yourself what you want, and then realize that all those people programming that stuff, all that marketing, that money has to come from somewhere, and it's available for you. No one has a gun to your head. You're not forced to buy DLC. It's just optional. But yeah, hearing all the vitriol when you're talking about No Man's Sky and all the stuff. I mean, yeah, you know what? You're going to buy stuff. You're going to be disappointed. I'm not saying that the hate isn't warranted at all. There were promises made that as of right now haven't been kept. I get that, and I sympathize. I didn't buy it. I didn't buy it because typically that's just not the type of game I play. So I wasn't at all interested in it, period.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not my thing.
You said that from day one.
Yeah.
You said that from day one, period. And to me, it was just one of those interesting things. But I don't even listen to all the hype. And I know they promised everything.
Right.
They didn't promise a lot. They literally promised everything.
Right. But here's the thing. And this is the last thing I'll say in regards to this, but some of the negative Steam reviews were like, I played this for 40 hours and it's just garbage. Really? It took you 40 hours to determine it was garbage? I can usually tell if a game is garbage within the first 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, yeah, seconds. I mean, it's not long. It's hey, what am I doing? This, wait, it sucks. I mean, it's to me, it's pretty quick. Yeah. To me, it's minutes. I will say, there is a broad range of games I'm seeing on this site, itch.io. All kinds of games, like this one, Overland. Just interesting games is what I'm going to say. And a broad range of prices. Some of them, I mean, a lot of them completely free, and then a couple of them $20 or more. Sky Rogue was one of them, $9, $9.99. I could see buying for my kid. It's like a vector... vector graphics, aka like almost like Minecraft-esque blocky jet game. I saw it's pretty cool.
Well, I'm seeing this right here, Streets of Rogue.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm on it. Like
it looks like it's trying to be something else, but I don't know what.
Well, it's like Streets of Rage, but it's a roguelike. But it's a top-down like brawler, but it also has some RPG elements. I mean, I'm in. Yes, right. I'm in. That's it. And you're not just seeing, yeah. So another cool thing, a tip that was given to me by Linux Gamecast recently, as topical as that is, you can within Steam or SteamOS, you can actually now have the power to limit your discoverable like game advertisements or your searches specifically. Well, the searches have always been the case, but you can limit it to games that are compatible on SteamOS, and it's still, I mean, thousands and thousands of games. So, as I've spoken about before, I have a drive on my main rig here with SteamOS exclusively on it and a ton of games, and it's my main way of playing games now. And my 5-year-old is totally into it, too. He just comes in, he knows, it's actually auto-set to boot directly to that drive if I want to go into a different OS. I just, by different OS, I mean different version of Linux. I promise I don't have anything else on any drive in this
Heathen. Machine. Heathen.
Yeah, whatever. No, it's not dual booting if you don't have the same drive, right? I'm just kidding.
I'm not even answering that.
Yeah. No, no, but I don't know. Anyway, I'm not going to defend you assuming that I have Windows on one of these drives, which I absolutely do not. Actually, ooh, there is. You know what? I'm gonna drop a quick mention here, because this thing. I wish I had video. I wish I knew where my webcam was, but go on to plug. Okay, here's a malicious plug. Podnuts.com/Amazon. If you're going to buy anything on Amazon, please use our affiliate link if you enjoy our content, which is absolutely free. Gives us a little bit of a back end on the purchases you are going to be making anyway. Podnuts.com/Amazon. But search for ICDOC. It's ICYDOCK. And you're going to see a variety of products. For instance, I'm holding one right here. So I have yet to install this in my main rig because I'm going to tear it apart tomorrow. But it's a enclosure that holds one 3.5-inch drive and then two SSDs side by side on top of it, but the entire enclosure fits into a 5.25 bay on my PC, right? So, and the reason I'm using this is because I have a liquid cooled system in my current machine, which took over. I had to actually take the traditional drive bays out altogether and just to house the liquid cooled system, because I have a mid-size case that was like 3/4 inch too short to place it the traditional way. Anyhow. But seeing this thing, so I can have two SSDs and a 3.5-inch drive just right there in the 5.25 bay. I have two 5.25 bays, so I'm going to get one of these, and I'm going to get another. Actually, I'm going to get two of these, and then there's another thing where I can fit inside the 3.5-inch bay, I mean, inside the 3.5-inch slot of this device, which holds two more SSDs. So I can have four SSDs right here in this tight-fit thing and then boot into, because right now I have a drive with Solus OS. I have a drive with a 1604 Ubuntu GNOME. I have a drive with Leap, OpenSUSE Leap on it, and then I have my SteamOS drive, and then my main storage drive that I back that I do manual backups as of right now to some externals for swapping. But yeah, search for ICDOC. You'll have I'll do a review on it later. Get some photos up in a blog or something. But yeah, go check them out. Fantastic products so far.
Pretty cool. Yeah, I definitely like this idea. And I'll say, if you're a desktop kind of person, which now, you know, that gorge is getting bigger and bigger, mm-hmm. Where there's the laptop people and the desktop people. If you're a desktop person, something tells me this will make you giddy.
Yeah. Yeah. Very cool. This is, now you could rig up something, you know, and the thing is, this thing was only like $12. These aren't insane expensive.
And then, yeah, I mean they seem, dare I say, fair priced.
Yeah, no, and it's not like super cheap plastic. I mean, this thing's pretty durable, and it's vented quite well. Where I don't imagine, I mean, an SSD becoming too insanely hot. I'm not doing anything crazy with them, but yeah,
right. Very cool. Very, very good find.
Yes, very, very impressed so far. All right, cool. Well, I think that was a good grip. Got us not quite caught up, but most of the way.
Fantastic. Good stuff.
All right. Well, anything else before we go and sign off for the night, Door?
No, I just want to thank everyone for their support. Thank everyone for downloading. Thank everyone for subscribing. And I'm going to ask listeners, once in a while I'll do this, do me a favor. Pick two podcasts this month and just send them an email. I'm not saying this show. In fact, don't send an email to this show. Send an email to another podcast you listen to, because I'm going to tell you right now, no podcaster gets quote unquote enough emails. If they do, they're the kind of people that don't answer emails anyway, like the people on Twit. I'm just saying. Most podcasters don't get enough feedback. So email your local friendly neighborhood podcaster and just let them know that you're thankful for what they're doing.
During this month of thanks. That's a good idea. Yeah, I really should do that. I'm fortunate. Well, I should say that we are fortunate enough to communicate with our listeners on a pretty regular basis. I'm touching base with guys on Google Plus literally every day, or getting caught up on messages and stuff. So we have a pretty active community. But those who are starting out, or those who have been doing it for a while, that just aren't getting that feedback, I can understand. I mean, from my own perspective and conversations I've had with others, you know, that touch base means the world. Just to know that, yes, there are people out there consuming the content, getting something out of it, or have something, you know, constructive to say that's going to make the content better. So, yeah, definitely please reach out, no matter what kind of show it is. I'm sure they'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, and I'll say, if you want to hold ongoing conversations with me or other Linux for the rest of us, mini PC type people. We do have a Mattermost server. Mattermost is a open source version of Slack that we have locally installed on a VPS that I am leasing or whatever. I don't know what the right word is. So if you want to hold conversations, ongoing conversations off the grid, not on a Google site or on Facebook or on Google Plus or on Twitter or on any of those other sites, just shoot me an email and I will create you a account for free.
Yeah, definitely been more active on that server than I have lately and getting some good conversations out of it. So yeah, definitely check it out. And if you want to send an email to the show, you can send it directly to podcast@linuxthestofus.com. Love to hear your feedback. We haven't got to read any user feedback in a while. We played some voicemails a while back, but send us an email when you can. But overall, let's see, next week's Black Friday. Man, that's crazy. Be safe if you're inclined to be one of those people. Just don't get trampled to death, please. We make sure that you're all safe. The extra savings on that 4K LED TV from that manufacturer you've never heard of, maybe it's not worth it. Just consider that.
Agree.
Yeah. All right, cool, everybody. Well, hey, thank you very much for listening to another show. Have a wonderful holiday season heading into next week, and please do not forget the most important thing, that Linux is not just for the rest of us, it is for all of us. Good night.
Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.